This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everyone. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak live on BBS Radio every Tuesday and Wednesday night from 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, or by going to our website at www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. There you can listen to past shows on our iPod Ready Archive section. You can also listen live on Nokia phones. Go to the website for details. And again, the site is www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. Tonight's guest is a fascinating senator that has, Senator James George Aburizik was a Democratic United States Representative and United States Senator. He was the first Arab American to serve in the United States Senate. He represented South Dakota in the U.S. Senate from 1973 until 1979. Hello, Senator James.
Hi. Good evening.
Very nice speaking to you, sir. Thank you for being with us this evening.
Thank you.
You have remained as controversial in your retirement as you were in your tenure as Senate, sir.
Well, I haven't retired. I'm still working.
Ah, you're still working. But how involved are you in government right now?
Well, not just on the margins, not very much. I'm going to start teaching a course on the Middle East this fall at the University Center here in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which is a combination it's a combination of the two major universities in the state. They've set up a campus
And the course itself, what are you going to be specifically teaching?
Well, it's called Middle East Policy Alternatives. And it's a way, I used to teach it at American University in Washington. It's a way to teach people the history and the background of the Middle East Arab-Israeli conflict.
And what do you mean by alternatives?
Well, I mean...
alternatives to solving the problems?
Well, they have to provide alternatives, policy alternatives, as part of their coursework. It depends on certain events that have happened, actual events that have happened in the Middle East since the 1920s. And they're to come up with policy alternatives on what the U.S. should do.
Well, that's fascinating. As a matter of fact, I worked with, I'm one of my poems, I'm a writer and a poet, and one of my poems was used to, in what was called the Green Line Project. Part of the Green Line Project was that it was an alternative economic plan based on the Green Line to help any kind of economic growth, because of course you cannot have peace unless you can sustain yourself as a nation. And the Green Line Project was a project that was supposed to have helped do that. It's still, I have a feeling with what's going on in the Middle East right now in Palestine and Israel that it's a long way from happening, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
What do you think about what happened in Annapolis, Senator?
Well, you mean the so-called peace talks?
The so-called peace talks.
Any of these things that the U.S. government gets involved in with Israel is a joke. It's just all sound and fury signifying absolutely nothing, as the guy said. It's just a way to keep people strung along to avoid doing what's right. And so they continue having these peace conferences that solve nothing, they propose nothing, they accept nothing, and absolutely nothing happens except more killing, more slaughter, more occupation.
Well, Condoleezza Rice seems to think that we can still, that there's still a possibility for peace to be achieved through the process before the end of the year.
Well, that's part of the scam. You know, the Secretary of State making a comment like that. It's all a scam. That's part of it.
What is the scam exactly?
Well, the scam is to make people believe that they're actually trying to make peace by offering something to the Palestinians, which they never do. And they wind up blaming the Palestinians for the failure of the peace talks, and it was set up for failure at the beginning, so they blame the Palestinians for it. That way Israel can keep occupying Palestinian land, keep mistreating, brutalizing, killing Palestinian people, and the world remains silent. They've even got the Europeans quieted down now.
Why do you suppose that is?
Well, I think it's because the Israeli lobby has got such a clamp on Congress and many of the presidents as well. They just simply don't want to give up any land, and they don't want to make peace. They'd rather have a low-level war, which they've got, rather than give up any land. So they continue it that way, and we enable them. We give them money to do it.
You know, we often hear, Senator, how powerful the Zionist and Israeli lobby is here in the United States. How did AIPAC become so powerful?
Money. Single word answer, money. They managed to direct a lot of campaign money to congressional candidates and to presidential candidates. And you see, now you've got all the candidates, Obama, Clinton, McCain, all of them swearing their fealty to Israel. Not a one of them interested in what's good for the United States in that regard. But they all bow
exactly.
And scrape to Israel, and that's because of the money situation.
How much money can it possibly take to buy a nation?
Well, it didn't take that much, apparently.
I guess not. You have often talked about the disgruntled Senate and Congress hiding in closets talking about their displeasure with the Israeli lobby.
Oh, yeah. In private, they'll badmouth them. In public, they swear their fealty to them.
And so how do we as American citizens in this country, Senator, how do we benefit from a Congress and a Senate that cowers in fear of monetary gain by
this
lobby?
Well, we don't benefit. It costs us. The primary purpose of the Israeli lobby, of AIPAC and its sister organizations, is to keep U.S. Treasury money and political support coming from America. And if anybody tries to upset that, they go after them tooth and nail.
When you say they go after them, you know, these are, you know, they're remarkable statements that we hear all the time in the background. It's all over the internet. At one time, as you said, and you're right, it seems to have quieted down in Europe. It was only, 2 years ago that there was a survey done in Europe that asked the Europeans who they thought, which nation they thought was the most volatile and was the biggest threat to world peace. And in almost every single instance, it was Israel. And yet, as you said, right now, it just seems to have quieted down. Do you think that it's overshadowed by what's happening with Iran and Iraq?
No, I think the public in Europe is still very strongly anti-Israeli, but governments have been taken in by U.S. power, which keeps the government silent. And when you have the governments remaining silent and members of Congress and so on, then the press has no one to quote. So therefore, the press becomes silent and remains that way.
Well, I think it was once said that at the loss of a free press, that is the first sign of the loss of democracy in a society.
That's a good statement.
I think it's a very true statement. Many people, there's so many issues right now that are so clearly biased towards the Israeli government, such as the latest inspections by the United Nations for nuclear ambiguity on the part of Israel. and this concept of nuclear ambiguity. I don't know what they exactly mean by that. Everybody in the world knows that they have over 200 nuclear warheads. And but do you believe that on, and this is something that I'm very attached to as a Palestinian, do you believe that this has been the instigating factor with the issues of Iran, Iraq wanting at one time to have nuclear power, North Korea, and other areas in Asia and the Middle East?
Well, look, let me say this first. I'm against anybody having nuclear weapons, including the United States, Israel, Iran, Iraq, whoever. But what's happening is that because Israel has built a nuclear arsenal that is the most powerful in that part of the world, then the other countries start to build one as a self-defense mechanism. And
right.
the lesson of Iraq is now you better have some kind of deterrent or the United States will come and invade you. So, you can see why Iran's trying to do what they're trying to do. I'm not sure they're doing it now. The last national intelligence estimate that was made public said that Iran stopped their program 4 years ago, which I think is a good thing that they stopped it. But I can understand why. Israel never joined the non-proliferation treaty. And they've
right.
got, as you said, well over 200 nuclear warheads. And it scares the hell out of everybody over there.
Do you believe that the fact that they do have this these warheads with impunity, that no one has ever done to them what was done to Iraq, has to do with the dissension in the Middle East against Israel?
I don't understand your question.
Well, the Middle East is watching, and Israel is getting away literally with murder.
Yeah. Right.
In my opinion, I would think that that would be, and as far as I can tell, this has been an agitating factor in what is going on in the Middle East. And no matter, you know, Iraq didn't get away with it, Iran is certainly not going to get away with it, and Israel is getting away with it, and the Middle East is watching and saying, hey, Palestine is first, Iraq came next, Iran is coming, we're next. So we better get some.
Well, you know, it does have an incentive for people to try to develop their own nuclear weapons just out of fear, I'd say. I think it's a terrible thing to have a nuclear arms race in the Middle East. I think the Iranians, by the way, and the Syrian governments, both of them proposed a year or two ago that the Middle East be made a nuclear weapons-free zone. And, of course, both Israel and the United States scoffed at that. Simply because Israel would have to give up its nuclear weapons, which would be a good thing if they did. I just can't see the Middle East going up in flames, for God's sake.
Well, I can't imagine it, but I'm afraid that that's exactly what may happen if America stays the course and continues to feed the neuroses of the Israeli government. Do you see that America has any real role in the Palestinian-Israeli peace process?
Well, they should have a role. They don't. The only role they do is enable Israel to continue its occupation. But there should be a peacemaking role. In other words, the United States ought to say to Israel, either you make a deal with the Palestinians or we're going to cut off your money. They won't do that, of course. That's a pipe dream on my part. But if that were to be done, that would Israel would make a deal tomorrow.
You have often said that you believe that stopping the funding to Israel and divestment would bring an immediate peace to the region.
That's right, yeah. Well, you see now, remember for so long everybody talked about a two-state solution with two states living side by side. Well, the fact is it ain't going to happen. So what's happening now is that a lot of people are proposing a one-state solution where they live together and have one man, one vote. Of course, you know what would happen there? The Palestinians would very soon outnumber the Israelis because they breed fast.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so that scared Olmert, who finally said he believes in a two-state solution just to avoid the one-state solution. But there's a book out by a psychiatrist named Joel Koval, K-O-V-E-L, called Overcoming Zionism, in which he proposes a one-state solution. And he reasons very well that the way things are going now, you'll never see a two-state solution. That with the U.S. backing Israel, it'll always take advantage of the Palestinians and never give up any land, and never allow them to have a state. So he said the only real response is to have a one-state solution, everybody living side by side.
Well, too, I mean, considering the fact that the West Bank and Gaza have been chopped up into, what, over 600 pieces, it would be kind of interesting to see any viability come from chopping up a country like that.
Well, that's the proposal now. That's what Israel's peace offer is, and the U.S. backing it, is to chop it up into what they call cantons, like in Switzerland, where the Israelis control all the roads, and they control the exit and egress from these different cantons. So it's not really a peace, it's just another form of occupation is all they're proposing.
Another form of imprisonment.
That's right.
Yeah. Do you believe that the Senate... we talk about the Senate and we talk about the fact that the Israeli lobby is so powerful. Here we have some really, really powerful candidates, Obama and McCain and Clinton. Yet I have read the transcripts of, say, Senator Obama's speech to AIPAC, and quite honestly, I see no difference in the policy towards Israel at all. Do you really believe that they can withdraw from Iraq?
The Americans?
Yes.
Sure, you bet. Yeah, all they got to do is withdraw.
Sounds simple enough, huh?
Well, it is simple.
What are they going to do with the 22 permanent bases that they've established there? And what are they going to do with Halliburton? And what are they going to do with all of the other multinational corporations?
Halliburton will have to find somewhere else to steal money beside Iraq. You know, maybe the government ought to just write them a big check and say, "Don't oppose our withdrawal." I mean, they've ripped off so much money; it's corruption at its highest over there.
And here, people are going to.
I think this economist Joseph Stiglitz has estimated now that if we withdrew tomorrow, it would cost us $3 trillion. That war. Because of all the veterans' benefits, the people we have to treat when they come back. I mean, you send American kids over there who are taught all their lives not to kill, and they go over there and they're taught how to kill, and they come back all screwed up with post-traumatic stress syndrome, I guess the label now. But it's an unbelievable fracture of these people. So they're going to have to be treated. They're going to have to be veterans' hospitals built for hundreds of thousands of GIs coming back from Iraq.
Well, the point is, do you think that we will withdraw?
Well, I think eventually we will. Within a year, I think if Obama gets elected, I'm not sure about Clinton. She's always said she wants more troops in Iraq. But I think Obama has pretty much committed himself to it. John Edwards was my candidate. I think he would have done it right away.
Yeah, a lot of people. I was quite a fan of Edwards myself, and
Ralph Nader is the only guy now who's talking about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. I saw him on Meet the Press when he announced his candidacy this year. People kind of laugh at him, but you know, he's got some serious issues to talk about.
Well, he's always had serious issues, and these issues are really coming out into the forefront. I mean, if you look at Ron Paul and his statements, and
that's
actually,
right.
I, in my opinion, he's mimicking what Ralph Nader has been talking about all along.
That's right, that's right.
Yeah, and, you know, now we're hearing it from a conservative faction, and it's not so much as the crazy old Nader coming out again. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Senator James Aburizik. Please feel free to call us on our toll-free number, 1-877-489-6350. And in the U.S. and Canada, call us at 888-228-4494. If you have any questions for Senator Aburizik, we'd be more than happy to take them. Senator, do you believe that you've ever been targeted in any way by the AIPAC lobby?
I was targeted by an assassin from Israel.
Really?
Years ago when I lived
in
Washington,
D.C. Can you talk to us about that?
When I lived in Washington, D.C., the FBI called me up. Bob Courtier from the FBI called up and said that while they were investigating the murder of Alex Oda, who used to be my staff member, they uncovered a plot on my life. They said, but don't worry, the guy went back to Israel.
Fascinating. Did you ever find out a little bit more about that?
They wanted me because I was the sole spokesman, you know, against what Israel is doing. The guy's name is Robert Manning. He's in prison now out in California. But he was a hitman who blew up Alex Oda, who killed my staff guy, put a bomb in his office and blew him up. And he got caught, not for Alex Oda, but he got caught because he had also been hired by a California businessman to eliminate one of his competitors. So he sent a letter bomb to the guy and it killed the guy's secretary, the businessman's secretary, but not him. And they found his fingerprints and his wife's fingerprints all over the letter bomb. And so they went to he was hiding out in the West Bank. Well, not hiding out, he was living there. And Peter Jennings on ABC Nightly News sent a producer, Jim Bamford, over there who filmed the guy. And they ran it on the ABC News, and it was so embarrassing for Israel and the U.S. State Department that they finally agreed to extradite the guy back here. But they said he can only be charged with the killing of the secretary, not with Alex Oda. So they agreed to that just to get him back here. And he went to prison. He was convicted and went to prison. And his wife, waiting extradition, died of a heart attack in an Israeli jail.
Wow. Fascinating. It's unbelievable.
That's the guy I think that was going to try to whack me.
How did you feel about that? Were you frightened?
Well, you bet, sure. Who wouldn't be?
Yeah. You know, in one of your interviews, you've made some interesting statements that may have I'd like to know if they caused you, if they came back to haunt you in any way. In an interview with Al Manar TV, you said that Israel requested that Hezbollah and Hamas be called a terrorist organization in America.
Why would the United States government name somebody over there as a terrorist unless they were asked to by Israel?
So you think that Israel all right, let me ask you something. This is something that a lot of people, many times, you know, we say that, you know, it's a right-hand, left-hand thing. But really, who's in charge? Is it America that's in charge, or is Israel calling the shots?
Well, I think the U.S. government's in charge, and Israel makes requests, and they comply with the requests. I think that's what happens. You can't believe the number of deals that the U.S. government makes in secret with Israel to give them money, weapons, technology, on and on and on. Stuff we don't know about. I mean, it's stuff that it's unimaginable how much money that we feed them under these secret agreements that we have with them.
Well, let me ask you, when you talk about secret agreements, who makes the secret agreements outside of the Congress and the Senate? Who are the guys
State
that
Department.
Make these?
The State Department and the administration.
And this isn't brought into the Senate, it isn't brought up to the Congress, it isn't brought
no.
up?
No.
So are we really a free nation, sir?
Well, not in that regard, we're not.
Well, if we're not in that regard, how can we be in any regard, really?
Well, we're pretty much free except for the aid and comfort we give to Israel, the political support we give them in the United Nations. You know, I've lost count of how many UN Security Council votes criticizing Israel we've vetoed. The U.S. has vetoed. Assembly votes are non-binding, so that doesn't count, but they don't need to be vetoed because they're non-binding anyhow.
Well, we have a caller on line three, Mike from California. Mike, do you have a question for Senator Abudizik?
Thank you very much. First of all, I'd like to say that the guest is perhaps one of the most straightforward, direct-talking politicians or ex-politicians I've ever heard. I wish he was running for president. Secondly...
What did I ever do to you, Mike?
Okay, I'm sorry. But listen, I would like to know, what do you think of 9/11? Do you think that Israel was somehow involved in any way?
I don't think so. No, I don't believe they were, no. I mean, that's a conspiracy theory I've heard about. I don't believe it.
And my second question, how do you feel about turning over the occupation or the rebuilding of Iraq to the Arab states? And are you working on that in any way?
No, I'm not. I'm not able to work on anything like that. But I think that what we ought to do as a country is withdraw our military from Iraq and let the Iraqis figure out what they're going to do. That should not be up to us. I think we're an occupation force in Iraq. We ought to end that occupation. If the Arab states want to help, that's great. I'm all for it. But it's nothing we should be involved in.
One of the things, and I'd like to go back to Mike's first question. Thank you, Mike, for calling. In one interview, Senator, you had said that you believe that the 911 attackers and the Israelis were cooperating with each other.
That's been wrongly played. What I said was that they played into the hands of the Israelis. The terrorist attacks in 9/11.
I see.
Well, that's what I meant. Maybe I didn't use those words, but what I meant was they played right into the hands and gave them a propaganda boost.
I see.
So guys like Alan Dershowitz come out and said, "Oh, he said we're cooperating, you know, with the Arab terrorists and so on." You know, they misquoted me. And deliberately so.
Fair enough. Let me ask you something. Will America attack Iran?
I don't think so, no. There, for a long time, I thought they were going to. Then somebody in the CIA leaked that national intelligence estimate, said the Iran stopped making nuclear weapons 4 years ago. That put an end to any plans that we might have had to attack Iran. I think they were building up to it before that.
Really?
But the CIA kind of redeemed themselves for a lot of their past sins by leaking that story out. It ruined George Bush's weekend.
There, I like that. He ruined George Bush's weekend. We have another call from Steve from Santa Fe on line 3. Steve, welcome to the People Speak and your question.
Thank you, Bessemer, and thank you, Senator. You ever think about moving to New Mexico? We need a good senator, sir.
Yes, I have, an awful lot. I love New Mexico. They took my family down there 2 years ago for Thanksgiving. We spent three, 4 days down there, just had a great time. I love New Mexico.
There's a good senator here, to say the least. My question, sir, you know, I look at this, and it's so overwhelming to me. I feel so helpless. And I'm very politically active, and I'm wondering if there isn't something that we could exert more pressure on our representatives or to do something to end supporting this genocidal maniac that's called Israel. And I'll listen to you online, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. I got to tell you that I saw some polling data recently and published by Eric Alterman in The Nation magazine that showed that American Jews did not really agree with their leadership with respect to their militancy, you know, the right-wing nature of the AIPAC and the American Jewish Committee and so on, who support Likud pretty much over there, you know, the right wing in Israel. And most American Jews there's a majority who don't agree with that. Yet the leadership are the ones who control the Congress with respect to politics, with respect to providing money for candidates to run for Congress and so on. And unless you can get enough people, especially a lot of people in the Jewish community, to exert pressure on the Congress, but a lot of just American citizens, whether they're Jewish or not, to exert pressure on the Congress to stop supporting what Israel is doing, which is illegal. It's an illegal occupation, illegal brutality, illegal torture, illegal killing. If enough people would understand, for one thing, the press doesn't talk about it very much, but if enough people in America could understand what is happening in their name, what's being done to the Palestinians in their name, they would exert pressure. And I don't know. I've tried to organize people. It's very hard to do. very hard to
do. In fact, it is very difficult to do. I've been an activist for over 20 years, Senator, and it seems that, but I have to tell you, I believe that there's been a resurgence in activism lately. I think the wars are actually frightening people. I think they're starting to think twice about picking up the protest banners again.
Oh, I hope you're right about that. But I don't see very much of that.
Well, do they really show very much of that in this country? How do you feel about a suppressed media? I mean, obviously you've said that
you don't think
we're getting the full story, so...
Of course we're not. Of course we're not. There was a, you know, the Israelis slaughtered 80-some Palestinians in Gaza. Three Israelis were killed and about 80-some Palestinians killed. There was a 10-second announcement on ABC News tonight, which I watched. And I mentioned to my wife, I said, for God's sake, why don't they do the full story? They don't do it, though. It's unfortunate.
They never do. Recently, Bush's trip to Israel has incited some belief in the West Bank and Gaza that he actually went there to give the Israelis the go-ahead. And this has been there's been a lot of talk on some of the international television news programs that we've been watching over the last couple of weeks. And this is really what they believe. They believe that Bush went there and said, you've got the go-ahead, you've got the green light, do what it takes.
Well, you know, he really doesn't need to go there. He can do it by telephone, which he's done in the past. Or he can send Condi Rice to tell him. But like in the summer war that they committed against Lebanon, the Israelis, against Hezbollah and Lebanon, they got the green light. In fact, the U.S. military helped them plan that invasion. That's an undisputed fact. And
oh, I believe
so,
that. Absolutely. Well, the interesting statement, and I'll never forget it, was when Condoleezza Rice said that they didn't feel it was the right time to have a ceasefire. And I'm thinking, when is it a right time to stop? When is it a wrong time to stop killing people?
Well, you saw what happened there. They believed Israel was going to win if they let them go a little bit longer, so she wasn't about to stop it. And then when Israel had enough, they sent the signal to the U.S. government that they wanted a ceasefire. That's what happened there. It was a tragedy.
You know,
a great tragedy.
And all the while, our government is here in this country doing things like eliminating habeas corpus, warrantless wiretapping.
Yeah.
We have the president and his cohorts in the background working to change laws so that in the future they could not go be charged with war crimes.
Yeah.
How do we get ourselves into such a mess, and how do we get out of such a mess, Senator?
Well, you can start back in the 1980s when Tony Coelho, who was a California congressman, started getting money for Democratic candidates from the corporations. And then you never heard, when they started taking money, you never heard any criticism of the corporate structure since that time. And you can go back to that to find out why the Democrats are so gutless now. I mean, you know, the thing is, they could stop the funding of the war anytime they wanted to. They just would not produce a bill. They would not produce an appropriations bill. But they'll do it, and they say, we can't stop it. My God, it's pitiful.
Well, you know, since you brought it up, and, of course, this has been a big issue in the Democratic Party, is that this what you called it, gutlessness, when did that come about? And
in the 1980s.
Weren't the Democrats the good guys at one time? Weren't we good guys?
Well, they used to be. But as I said, it started in the 80s when they started taking corporate money. And that silenced them pretty much. I mean, you know, what a bunch of weak sisters there and brothers.
Do you see voter reform ever taking a strong role in getting a handle on what's happening in
you mean campaign contribution reform? No, I have no hope on that.
You don't have any hope in that?
No. I introduced that in the Democratic caucus the year I was a freshman senator, and it passed. It passed in the caucus and went out to the Rules Committee. They finally did public financing for presidential campaigns, but they wouldn't do it for congressional campaigns. As a lot of them said in that meeting, these old guys get up and say, I'm not going to finance my opposition with government money because I can't. They can't raise any money now. I'm not going to give them any money. So that's where that stops.
Do you know of any of the senators or congressmen that you would place your faith in right now, currently, that are in office?
Well, I like, what's the guy from Wisconsin? Feingold. Russ Feingold's a very good senator, very good guy.
Yes.
And I like Dick Durbin from Illinois. He's
actually, I had hoped that Russ Feingold would run for president.
I'd have voted for him.
Yeah,
there are three or four, and that's about it. Bob Byrd, amazingly, from West Virginia, is getting very old now, but he's stood up. He stands up. He doesn't back down from anybody. But the rest of
We have a call from Samantha from Texas on line three. Samantha, your question for the senator?
Oh, my question is, Senator, why is the USA supporting Israel?
Well, as I said earlier, money. The Congress, the AIPAC, the Central Coordinating of the Israeli Coordinating Committee of the Israeli Lobby, directs money toward candidates who support Israel and against candidates who don't support Israel. So they've got everybody scared to death. And when you want to run for office, you go and talk to the campaign committees and whatever party, Democrat or Republican. And you'll say, where can we get some money to run for office? They say, go see the Israeli lobby. And you have to write a letter, I guess, now to tell them that you're going to stand up for Israel if you run. Then they'll raise money for you. So it really amounts to money, and people are afraid to go against them for fear that the lobby will put money against them and with their opponents. So it really amounts to just campaign money. And
let me ask you, Senator, it seems that nobody makes it into office without one, two, or three trips to Israel. Did you ever get a free trip to Israel?
No, I never did. I went there.
Oh, you weren't one of the lucky ones, huh?
No, I wouldn't have accepted it from Israel anyhow. But they do a lot of that. They do an awful lot of it.
Yeah, they do. And our candidates have been to Israel many, many times, and how about speaking to the AIPAC lobby here in Washington?
What about it, you mean?
Were you ever invited to speak?
Oh, no, of course not. No.
Very interesting. And did you have a lot of opposition when you were running for Senate?
No, I didn't. I didn't when I ran, but later on.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I hadn't made my position known yet.
I see.
But I did after I got elected to the Senate.
I see. And to our listeners, Senator James Obudzik was also the founder of ADC, the Arab American Anti-Discrimination League.
Committee.
When did you leave the committee?
Well, the first time I left was 1995, and then they asked me to come back here 3-4 years ago, and I came back and chaired the committee for a couple years, and then I left again.
Is your relationship with Jim Zerbe still intact?
Well, I never had a good relationship with him.
Very interesting. A couple of
don't want one. I don't want a good relationship with him.
Do you think that he's a detriment to the ADC?
Well, he doesn't belong to ADC. He's got his own organization.
Oh, that's right. He's with AAI, yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
After I fired him from ADC, he went out and started his own organization.
I see. Very interesting.
No, he's the one who endorsed Martin Indyk for the National Security Council to be the Middle East guy.
Martin Indyk? I don't remember the name.
Well, he came from the Israeli lobby and became Clinton's Middle East advisor. He was an Australian citizen.
Right.
He was an Australian citizen, and he got his citizenship in a week so he could work in the U.S. government. It took him 1 week to get his citizenship. Then he became, later on, ambassador to Israel from the United States. And Zogby wanted to endorse him to get favors from him, I guess. I don't know why.
Fascinating. We have another. We have a question from one of our audience members. Lindsay from Iowa wants to know: do you think that U.S. interests in Middle East resources, namely oil, are a large part of our support of Israel?
Well, no. If you were going to use logic and reason, you'd say, no, we won't give that support to Israel because the Arab countries don't like Israel very much. And that's where all the oil is, in the Arab countries, not in Israel. So it just doesn't make sense. There's no logic to it. Except
then what is the logic of our being there, sir?
Of being where?
In the Middle East. Why are we there if it is illogical for us to
be
there?
Well, we're there to protect oil resources. But there's no logic in giving Israel money to make the Arabs angry. There's no logic to that.
Do you think that, in my own personal opinion, and this is what I believe that probably one of the most dangerous places to be on earth today is Israel. They're making a lot of enemies.
Yeah, well, they're making a lot of enemies for us, too.
They certainly are. We have another question from a gentleman from Australia, and he would like to know who funds AIPAC.
Well, they say it comes from people who support Israel, from Zionists here in America. Who knows where they get their money from? I don't know. I've never seen a list or anything. They just say that.
Interesting. Just fascinating.
Hey, if we could wrap it up, I gotta go do something else right away.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Senator, for being with us this evening. It was a pleasure. Again, you have been very candid. I think that this has been quite a surprise to a lot of people because we don't often hear people that were in the government or are involved in any sort of government that speak so openly and candidly. And we really appreciate it. Thank you very much, Senator, for being
with
us.
Well, I'll say thank you very much, Basma. I just want to tell you, during the Israeli invasion of Lebanon, was that last summer or summer before, whenever it was, I was doing a lot of radio interviews, and there was two guys from Florida, a Florida radio station, asked me to do an interview. So I started saying, well, Israel's invaded this country, and they've destroyed and killed about 1,000 people. And one of them said, well, don't you know that Israel just wants peace? I said, yeah, they want a piece of Lebanon. They want a piece of Syria. And, you know, they hung up on me.
Did they really? That's unbelievable.
That put an end to the interview right there.
I guess so.
Okay, many thanks, Basma. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Senator, very, very much. You have a good evening, sir.
Okay, bye.
Well, you heard it here, folks, on the People Speak Radio. A very candid interview. I'm not surprised. He's a man of great courage and great strength. I'm a little bit at a loss for you know, all of the candor. And like I said, we sit here and we talk about these things all the time, but how often do you actually hear a member of government that actually says it? I like the fact that he said that they didn't support him, but they didn't support him, and the reason was he didn't make his opinion known until after he got into the Senate. I really like that. It worked, and if it works. We have a wonderful guest tomorrow, author and activist Kathy Wilkerson, with our host, David Swanson, Wednesday, March 5th, at 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And next week I will be interviewing, Cindy from... Cindy in Iraq is her book, and she is a contractor, and her son is currently in Iraq. So it should be a couple of very interesting evenings for us. Thank you all for being with us tonight. Let's take him to Kinko and run a few thousand copies of him. Exactly. That's what I'd like to do, 2XN. Thank you very much. Exactly. Honest politicians are rare, and it's unfortunate because isn't this America the land of the free and the home of the brave? Good night, everybody. It's been wonderful. Thank you very much for being with us this evening.
One bright sunny morning in the
shadow of the city wall. By the relief of death, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.